Welcome to Baderson. We make up stories improvised and recorded live. We start each story by choosing a random phrase from a source of text. My name is Drew, and my source is Envisioning Information by Edward R. Tufte.
My name is Ben, and my source is The Feynman Lectures on Physics by Richard Feynman.
My name is Casey, and my source is Landscaping for Wildlife in the Pacific Northwest by Russell Link.
My name is Mike, and my source is Beastie Boys Book by Michael Diamond and Adam Horovitz.
We will now choose a performer at random, and that performer is... Casey.
Okay. Flipping to a random page.
Of what again? Landscaping
this
in the...
Landscaping for Wildlife in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
Next to another rock pile or brush pile. Next to another rock pile or brush pile.
It was so windy that summer in Alabama.
You could stack anything and the wind would just blow it right down.
Firewood was getting blown down the street. Trees were getting knocked over. Cars were getting just covered in sap that was blowing sideways out of the trees.
There were lots of tourists in the town. They typically came to see an extensive cave system that was in the area. But their hats were blowing off. Their ice cream was getting knocked out of their hands.
The signs were covered in dust that was blowing down the streets. People couldn't figure out where they were going. The locals were too irritable to answer questions. It was mayhem.
And one of the reasons that there were even more tourists than usual visiting the cave system is that all these winds were blowing through the caves and having all these interesting, weird, different effects. There were outlets to the caves that wind was blowing out in multiple different pitches and playing these chords, like musical notes. There was other parts of caves where it was blowing moisture out and it was creating these sort of spray, fountainy type effects. There was just all sorts of interesting, unusual things happening because of all this high wind.
Zeniba Walker was a meteorologist, and this was her first assignment for the National Meteorology Studies Task Force. She's not native to Alabama. She grew up in California. She's dispatched there to study these wind patterns, which have been going for weeks.
And it was highly unusual. That's why they called the task force. They couldn't have regular meteorologists going down there. They needed a quick response. And Zeniba was pretty nervous because this was her first assignment since she got promoted to the task force.
A phenomenon like this had never occurred before, and she had never been out in the field before.
She had done her dissertation on lunar winds and Martian winds, which for some reason they thought was relevant, but she couldn't quite see the similarity yet. But as she sat in her hotel room with the papers strewn all over her bed, she began to come up with an idea.
She started to wonder about the relationship. She'd been looking at maps of the area. Kingston, Alabama was the town where these caves were, and it was the center of these high winds. And she'd be looking at maps of the area and looking at topographical maps, especially to see if they would yield any clues. And she saw some similarities between the local geology and the local topography and the area of the moon that she had most studied, which was called the Cliffs of Grover. It was an area on the moon that was the highest lunar winds. And there was a striking similarity between the shape of the area around Kingston and the Cliffs of Grover.
And this was not definitive, but it was worth acting on because the what happened at the Cliffs of Grover is that the winds were heavy for a period of 6 weeks, and then they were catastrophic. The winds increased incrementally and then started to crumble some of the cliffs, and that created this ping pong effect of wind velocity, and the winds just accelerated, and it was devastating. Zeniba,
so she texted her assistant Brian, and then Brian called her right away, which always annoyed her because she just wanted a text back. She just texted, "Meet me in the lobby," and then immediately her phone rang, so she answered the phone, and Brian asked her, was like, "Hello, how's it going? I'm at the bar getting a drink. Do we have to go right now?"
She could hear in the background the wind sort of whistling and howling in the bar, and the occasional glass breaking as it was blown to the ground. She was used to the chaos down in the bar, and her frustration with Brian, her frustration with the situation in general, was really starting to get to her. She had lots of very expensive, delicate equipment in the room, and Brian sometimes would sort of like walk into the room unannounced, and the gusts of wind would blow dust and papers all over the place, and she found herself getting a little short with Brian on the phone.
And she said, "Brian, it's barely past five, and you're already in the bar.
He said, "Hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere."
"Yeah, it's 5 o'clock here. I know." And the
and threw back another one.
And she said, "Brian, listen, we are 5 weeks into this storm. And if these patterns bear any more similarity to the winds of the Cliffs of Grover, we are about 1 week away from things really flipping into catastrophic territory. And I've got a pretty dramatic proposal I want to run by you, and I need you sharp right now. So, like, you know what? I'm coming down.
Brian was like, "I think you're breaking up. I'll see you when you get down here, I guess." Hung up.
They had to talk that night, but she didn't get very far before she thought, "I can't trust Brian. Even if I get through to him tonight, it's going to be the same thing tomorrow. We have to work every minute for the next week." So she gave up on Brian, and the next day dedicated the first 3 hours of the day to finding locals that she could trust.
And after a couple of real false starts, and she was being coy about what her plan was because she knew that it was going to be beyond provocative. And she tried to feel out the mayor, and that was a non-starter. She didn't want to listen really at all. She just was very focused on wind management. You know, they had gone and they just, all their resources were going to wind management. She really wasn't giving Zeniba the time of day. She tried, she thought she was meeting with the city council president, but it was actually the president of the local zoo. So that meeting was a total non-starter. And she met with the head of the Chamber of Commerce, who just tried to get her to join and wasn't really like listening much. And the person she talked to who had the most promise was the cave system was run by an all volunteer organization called the Kingston Cave Association. And, Louisa Barcott was the head of the association and really wanted to hear what Zeniba had to say, because although it had drawn all these people to the caves, this wind incident, the whole thing was so chaotic. It was really disruptive. People were getting hurt. The cave system was just out of control.
There had been a feature done on Zeniba in the local newspaper, and ever since then, people had kind of started recognizing her on the street a little bit. And she was starting to feel some pressure from the locals. Like, she was one of the official people tasked with sort of understanding what's happening and taking some kind of remediation steps. And so Louisa Barcott knew who Zeniba was and was more than excited to talk to her about it. Louisa had her own concerns about...
Lindsay?
Louisa.
Okay.
Louisa had her own concerns about wildlife. There were dead birds everywhere. The bats were having trouble getting back to the cave and some of the protected areas where the bats roosted. So both of them were anticipating this meeting a lot.
And so Louisa sits down at the meeting and says, okay, things are really out of control here. And I'm thrilled that you have a plan here and a suggestion, because we really want to get things back on track as far as the cave's concerned. And Zeniba says,
well,
yeah.
My plan is to evacuate everyone and let Kingston basically get ripped apart by these winds, because there's nothing stronger in the world of wind. We're talking, you've heard of a gale force wind. This is a,
this is much worse.
This is a hyper gale situation. And so they talked about evacuation plans, because Louisa heard the word hypergale and was like, got it.
But then Louisa had an idea and said, listen, the caves themselves, you know, there's all kinds of crazy wind blowing through them. We're all well aware of that. But they are a relatively sheltered, protected area, and the major chambers in the cave are quite large, and there's power down there. We've got a ventilation system. Well, there's a natural ventilation system right now. Could we evacuate some number of people, perhaps even the whole town, into the cave?
And furthermore, Louisa's saying, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but this is like, people around here are really struggling financially, right? Like, these are not... First of all, people don't leave. People love Kingston, so they don't move away. This multi-generational, people don't go. People don't have family elsewhere, and they don't really have the money to move, relocate, start over. So if we're going to get these people to safety, I think the cave is going to be our best bet.
Louisa, this, again, was her first assignment of any import.
Zeniba.
And she knew the gravity of what she was suggesting. She didn't have the authority to command it to happen, but she had a lot of sway in reporting to her superiors and the local city officials. So the momentous sort of nature of this decision was really weighing on her conscience. She didn't know if she was really qualified to be instructing an entire city to evacuate, whether to a cave or elsewhere.
But nonetheless, she had watched in close detail through very high-powered telescopes the kind of havoc that was wreaked on the cliffs of Grover when these winds went catastrophic. And she knew that in less than a week now, they had to do something. She wouldn't be able to live with herself if they didn't take some sort of drastic action.
So... they agree to get everyone in Kingston into the cave and make it an all Kingston camp out, because they don't want to tell everyone that this is to save their lives, because I think they agreed that'll cause a riot. People will question the plan. But Kingston loves a camp out, and this is going to work. So they started advertising.
There was the annual Kingston campout was the first weekend of every August, and there was a billboard in town that said Kingston loves a campout with a K, first weekend in August. And normally the campout was held at the county fairgrounds.
There's fallen trees. You couldn't even get to the fairgrounds. Yeah, there's
no way. It was the first weekend of August, and so they just redirected all that camp out energy. It was the event of the year, and they just relocated it into the caves.
There's 3 days to go. The whole town's getting into it. Almost all of Zeniba's energy is now spent with Louisa. Going door to door, running into people at the store, making sure they know about the camp out, giving them directions. Here's a packing list. here's where to park so that everyone can get to the caves and all this stuff. And they're killing it. All those people that couldn't help her before, the zoo boss, the mayor, the city council president, they're helping now because the camp out looked like it was all for naught. And now Zeniba's a big hero to them because she found a way to save the camp out.
The only person who's really not on board is Brian. Turns out he was jealous of Zeniba all along. So he's been just holding court in the hotel bar, attracting a lot of malcontents and talking about like, I know winds. You know, these aren't winds. These aren't hyper gale force. They're just going to be gale force.
Like, I was on this task force for years before Zeniba came along. I was one of the original hires on this task force. Do you remember the winds? Do you remember the Marlin winds in the Florida Keys? Yeah, that was me. I was the guy that was working the Marlin winds. You know how many casualties we had? 5. But they thought there was going to be like 50. So that was pretty good.
No one in the bar had heard of the Marlin winds, but the details were less important than the vibe.
Brian was very charismatic, very persuasive, really knew how to work a crowd.
And so there was this growing slice of the town that was like, yeah, these winds aren't any kind of concern. And due to Brian's jealousy, he was also persuading them to kind of not even bother going to the camp out. Like maybe we could cut a path to the traditional fairgrounds and have our camp out there. He used that
like, you don't want a second rate underground camp out. Like, Kingston loves a camp out. You have a campground already. Like, let's not throw that away because of some gale force winds that won't even be close to hyper gale force.
I mean, we're used to it at this point. And that was one of the other points he would make. Like, everything's blown down that could blow down. Everybody's had their yard shredded up and their cars dinged up and there's sap everywhere. And who cares? It's windy now. It's just part of life.
So they love him. Zeniba is sleeping like 2 hours a night because after a full day of rallying Kingston around the camp out, she is going back over the notes and the footage and all the data from the Cliffs of Grover to see, is there anything I missed? Is there anything else I need to be prepared for here? This isn't just my first job. This is possibly my only chance to save the lives of many, many people. Are we doing the right thing? What is there something I'm missing? And she's going over photos, satellite photos, and these composite videos that made out of photos and these simulations of what they think happened inside the cliffs, looking for clues. And then she in one of these simulations, she observes, she's replaying the initial slide of that cliff that starts the hypergale winds again and again. And she asks the AI bot that has been assigned to help her on all of her work throughout her career. And she asks it questions like, what is the mineral makeup of that section of the cliff? And Kelvin tells her
predominantly feldspar.
And she says, turn the image upside down. Let me watch it from upside down. And Kelvin obliges. And then she has her eureka moment.
She goes, Kelvin, pull that image up and put it side by side with the structural image of Kingston. And Kelvin does. And
what are those caves made out of?
Feldspar. And when the images are next to it, she says, okay, now overlay the images. And the collapsing cliffs that are the thing that triggers the winds to go from gale force to hyper gale force are, relatively speaking, located in the same location as the outdoor county fairground traditional site of the Kingston camp out. Those which is also on a little bit of a cliff protrusion. That is where the similar spot would be if there were a cliff collapse to happen in Kingston.
And she says, Kelvin, are there any historical structures that you can cite that are similar to this pattern? And Kelvin, I don't want you to hallucinate any answers. So anything that you dig up, please cite your sources and double check them. And Kelvin says, I will consider, and thinks for a few minutes and says, yes, there was one historical case of similar structure, and it was in the Florida Keys in 2015, associated with the winds of Marlin.
There was casualties.
50 expected. Not so bad.
But still.
Could have been worse. Could have been better. The deaths often blamed on careless
gross mismanagement on the part of the National Meteorological Research Task Force.
And hubris on the part of officials tasked with managing the situation.
Widely considered to be a stain on the reputation of the agency.
Would you like more information? And she says, no, thank you, Kelvin. But a dark cloud has entered her consciousness now. She has a newfound paranoia and suspicion rising in her heart.
So she texts Brian and says, are you in the bar? I need to talk to you. And he calls her right back. And she's like, God damn it, just tell me where you are.
She can barely hear him because he's outside at the county campground and the wind is just whipping around him.
They've set up a bar there,
And, he's at the campground bar.
He says, I'm flying a kite. She says, what? He says, I'm flying a kite.
Like never before.
You have to get everybody out of there, Brian. You have to get everybody out of there.
And he says, no. He says, no, you got to get everybody out here.
This is the camp out.
Not the camp in.
These people want to camp. These people want their traditions. And if you lock them away in there, it's going to really damage the reputation of the task force.
She put her phone away and she gets in the company car and she goes to the cave and says, Louisa, put someone else in charge. I'm going to need your help. Louisa puts someone else in charge and jumps in the car and they drive out to the fairgrounds.
And on their way there, there's actually a number of people who had been at the cave who had caught wind of the fact that the camp out was happening and had been kind of enticed. And so there was a flow of people actually from the caves headed in the same direction they were headed.
And Zeniba's calculating in her mind, if there's a tremor, there's no time to get everyone to the cave. And she's replaying the video in her mind. I need to get everyone higher. I need to get to higher ground so that the collapse happens beneath them. We need to get out of the collapse zone because the landslide and the crumbling is all going to go toward the cave. They have to get out of the path. So they get to the grounds and they're waving flares and on the way they'd stopped at a party store and they got all these noisemakers,
sparklers,
and people totally mistook what they were trying.
We made the right decision.
We've got to evacuate. The party's get out of here. And people were like, "Hey, Zeniba's here. Welcome to the party.
Party out, not see the party light. In."
And so they were upset about their choice of attention getters. And just then the earth shakes. And Zeniba says, Louisa, we got to get people up. And Brian says, that's right. And he turns the music up.
Party up, not party down. Wait, that didn't track.
Everybody wants Brian to live in Kingston from now on. Like this group is just like, you can't leave, dude.
They're pretty insular normally, but he has won them over hardcore. And at this point, word was really spreading about people started to leave. The
about
momentum
the
really
awesome
shifted.
Awesome party.
Great
against
party
all
at the camp
the best out. Best camp out ever.
And it's kind of wild. People are embracing the winds. They're kind of doing this human kite thing where they're a couple people will like put their arms around each other and they'll hold on to ropes, and other people like float them up in the air like a kite. And there's a lot of just flying things around, using the wind for fun stuff. People are throwing drinks up in the air, like throwing the liquid up in the air, and it gets blown like 10 feet and right into people's mouths. And everyone's just kind of loving and feeling
Zaniba
the wind.
Looks at Louisa just like with this look of just dismay and disbelief on her face. And Louisa shrugs and says, Kingston loves a camp out.
Now, the campground itself was actually at a pretty high elevation. It's kind of this flat plain area, and it had a view of an opposing ridge line. And you could see like a good 5 or 10 miles upwind. And Zaniba could see that the winds were picking. I mean, the winds were picking up where they were, but even in the distance, she was seeing like trees blowing around. I mean, it kind of looked like a tornado, but just spread out all over the landscape. And she realized this is it. This is the winds are getting triggered. This collapse is starting in different parts of the area. It's do or die time. And she looks to Louisa and says, "We just need to take who we can and get out of here. I think we've lost these people."
But Louisa says, "Well, remember how we got everyone to the caves? We didn't talk about wind. We talked about the party, the camp out, the community. Let's just move the party to a safe area."
And Zaniba has cottoned on to the fact that Brian is now who everybody listens to. And so she finds him. He's actually doing this thing where he's tied his ankles to a rope and he jumped up in the air and he's basically vertical. He's connected to this tree and he's vertical in the wind. And he's rotated around. He's doing like a keg stand. He's got a keg thing in his mouth, and people are cheering him on. And
so she runs up and waves people down and like ties a rope around her feet, and they like enthusiastically hoist her up in the air. So she's floating up in the air right alongside Brian.
And she's like, "Look, Brian,
I have always loved you. You're the number one task forcer ever.
And I don't know what happened in Florida, but I know that's like a black mark on your record. And he starts to protest, and she just says, it doesn't even matter what happened. I know that that has followed you, and I know that that probably haunts you. And this is your chance for redemption. This is your chance to be a hero. And if you don't get these people underground, then this is going to be even worse than Florida."
And Brian looks in her eyes, and a sort of menacing expression behind his eyes comes over his eyes. And he says, "Oh, Zaniba, did you think that the Winds of Marlin was an accident? Did you think that those five people actually had to die? that I was actually trying to save their lives? Well, I think you're going to find something out today about what these winds are capable of."
And she gets the whole story from him, and that's
the
all
whole
she needs
story,
to hear.
Like starting with, you know, middle school when he like tripped a girl and she went to the hospital.
And she takes out her switchblade and slashes the rope that's holding him to the tree, and he just flies away. From carried away on the wind.
The crowd
mid college story about the time he took disabled the brakes in a bus.
And as he's blowing away, he's talking about the fact that his mother and father don't talk to him anymore.
And the crowd, yeah, they see him blow over the cliff. He just blows away out of sight. And the crowd is furious. And
they mob up. They start coming after Zaniba, and she and Louisa said, "This is it. This is our chance." And they start heading for the cave.
They run
for the cave. And the crowd is behind them, angry. Their favorite, their hero has been cast over a cliff. They're enraged,
and
blood in their eyes.
So Zaniba and Louisa are running. Behind them, a mob of angry campouters chasing them. Behind them, the campground shudders and shakes, and it's the opposite of a sinkhole. Instead of the ground dropping, it actually bursts up and creates a landslide, and boulders and sediment, boulders are tumbling down, sediment is pouring after the mob. It sweeps away the people that are in the back, the slowest runners of the mob, and everyone else picks up speed, and Louisa and Zaniba can see the cave now. They can see the signs. You're 200 yards from the greatest attraction in Kingston.
and the gale, the winds cross over from gale force to hyper gale force, and they are blowing towards the cave. And so all the people who are running all of a sudden get swept up in this wave of wind and blown into the mouth of Big Cave, which Big Cave is the entrance. It's the main cave that you go into. And they all just get blown into the cave in a huge pile, and all the rubble from the landslide gets just blown up behind them and packs the entryway full of stone and closes them off inside the cave.
It's eerily quiet in the cave after this kind of incredibly loud, hectic thing. You can still hear the wind howling outside, but now we're in a blackened cave. The power's gone out, and a lot of people are kind of weeping quietly to themselves and nursing their wounds.
And it's the first moment of quiet really in weeks in Kingston, because the wind has been howling for all that time.
Even inside the cave. And now that the entrance of Big Cave has been closed up, even that is, it's still air. No one's felt still air except in their closed rooms for a long time.
And everybody kind of realized they hadn't put a finger on it, but the constant wind had created so much agitation internally. They had been so worked up and just so, their nervous systems have been so activated by this constant blowing wind, and they just hadn't realized it until they had this moment of calm.
Zaniba, on the other hand, has no such calm. She thinks this entire cave of people is going to murder her at any moment. She's still running. She's going deeper and deeper into the cave, just trying to find a nook or some kind of hole to hide in, but she's running into stalagmites and stuff because it's dark.
And she doesn't know where she's going. She keeps coming to all these different intersections. She's just guessing, making turns, taking rights, taking lefts, going down, and just running, crawling, jumping down things, just getting as far away from this angry mob as she can.
She has a light, but she's long since left behind the lights that they'd set up for the camp in. She's in unfamiliar territory. The cave walls are getting wetter. They're dripping a little bit. This is not usual. And as she slows a little bit and her heart slows, she realizes, like, I'm really lost.
And she is really lost. And in fact, she never makes it out. She spends the last few days of her life wandering down along the lower recesses of this massive cave system, trying to retrace her steps. You know, she can keep herself alive for a little while, drinking these little trickles of water that she can kind of lick off the walls. But eventually she succumbs and she dies somewhere alone in the darkness, in the depths of this cave system. The last thing she hears is kind of a distant chord of a tone being played, for a gentle wind passing through some cave, some passages of the cave.
Louisa was able to get everyone else out. She knows the cave layout, you know, having volunteered there for so long. And she would go back in every day. I mean, the cave was closed for a while. The city did a whole lot of, you know, a whole like recovery effort. And she would actually sneak in. You weren't allowed in the caves, but she would sneak in and look for Zaniba in vain, ultimately.
The Kingston Cave Association established a memorial for her, the savior of the town. It stood outside the big cave entrance, just past the only 10 yards to go sign that was
the
there.
The hotel established a memorial to Brian right at the bar.
It was controversial, but they kind of leaned into the edginess of it.
A bar stool that everyone always left vacant.
And in the official records of the National Meteorological Research Task Force, the report on this event went into great deal describing the gale force winds and their duration and the recognition that Zeniba's research and how she accurately predicted what was going to happen in the conversion from gale force to hyper gale force winds. And the report closed by saying that in the Kingston hyper gale force wind tragedy, in the end, only 5 people died, but it could have been a lot more.
The end.
Baderson stories are improvised and recorded live over the internet. We clean up the audio, but we don't edit, rehearse, or redo any content, for better or worse. Subscribe and find other stuff we do at baderson.com. And remember, if you're ever lost in the dark, a story will get you out alive.
Yes, it will.